This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer on Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards, and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to this special episode of the Lawyer on Air podcast. Today I am welcoming back Mindy Allen on the show. Mindy was last with us in Season 1, Episode 6 of the podcast, which aired in June 2021, and you can find a link to that episode in the show notes. Well, let me catch you up on Mindy. Since we last spoke, Mindy accepted a director role in legal recruitment at Major Lindsay & Africa in their Tokyo office. She is in the law firm practice group at MLA. That means her focus is on associate recruiting for law firms, both recruiting of bengoshi, that's Japanese lawyers, and international lawyers. Mindy works with these law firms in Japan to identify candidates. She also provides guidance to bengoshi, gaiben, that's foreign registered lawyers, and other foreign qualified lawyers as they navigate their way through their legal careers in the Japanese legal market. Mindy is originally from New York, and she practiced corporate law in both New York and Tokyo for over a decade before joining Major Lindsay & Africa. She began her legal career as a summer associate with Skadden's Tokyo office in 2008, and then she worked as a legal consultant at Oebashi in Osaka before joining Milbank's Global Securities Group as an associate. Mindy then moved in-house to Sojitsu Corporation, a major Japanese trading house, where she served as senior counsel. And prior to becoming a legal recruiter, Mindy worked in private practice as counsel at Southgate, a boutique Japanese law firm focused on cross-border M&A and venture capital. Mindy's been living in Tokyo since 2014 and is fluent in Japanese. She serves on the Executive Committee of Women in Law Japan and is a lecturer at Keio University Law School's LLM program. And Mindy is an avid baker and loves spending time at the beach. Mindy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Thank you for the introduction and thank you for having me back.
I'm glad to have you back. And last time, you'll remember, as I do with everybody, I started out with asking you about your favorite restaurant wine bar. And you told me about Teote. I think it is, right?
Teote? Yeah, Teote.
Teote. Thank you. And Ebisu. And I wondered if you'd found any other new discoveries in the time since we'd last talked, or if you are still going to that restaurant right now as your favorite patron.
I still go to that restaurant because their pizza is very, very good and it's in my neighborhood, but I'm still working from home most of the time as I was then. So I've been trying more neighborhood places and I'm not drinking right now, but one place I sometimes go in the afternoon with my husband to get lunch is a chai tea place called Urn Chai and Tea. I know that chai is tea, so it's a little repetitive. But they have really, really delicious chai, and they have these like huge cauldrons of chai that are just bubbling away on the counter. So when you walk in, the shop smells amazing. And they have sandwiches and some little cakes. So maybe wow. I would ask if we were meeting for lunch to meet you there if you also like chai.
Oh, I do like chai, but cauldrons, you've got me seeing this massive imagery of what's going on there, and I can imagine the aroma as you walk in. How lovely. Yes, I'd love to do that. Let's do that at some point. I'd really love to catch up again. Yeah. Well, let's jump in, Mindy, if you don't mind. You know, you're a legal recruiter now in this law firm space in Japan. I'd really love to go to the core of things, what the recruitment process is like in Japan these days for law firm hires, how long it takes from that first inquiry into placement and the steps along the way. Could you explain about that for us?
Sure. So it's a pretty straightforward process, I would say. It can take Often around 2 months, sometimes a little more. Sometimes it can take as little as 1 month, especially if there's no visa involved or somebody is already in Japan, so they're not relocating from overseas. Basically, the first step in the process is it depends if the candidate I'm working with is a fit for an open role at a law firm, or whether sometimes they're not a fit, but they are a good candidate. And in that case, before just sending their CV to a law firm, I would work with the candidate. I mean, either way, I would work with the candidate to put together a target list of law firms based on their interests, the firm's needs, what they do in Tokyo, things like personality, size, whatever the candidate is looking for, practice area, of course. And then if there is no suitable open role, then I would first contact the law firm without using the candidate's name or sending their CV and say, I'm working with a person with these characteristics, this many years of experience. Would you potentially be interested in someone like that? And then I wait, and if they say yes, please send the CV, then that's the next step. If no, then it ends there. But then once you send the CV, the process is basically the same. The firm reviews it, decides if they want to interview the candidate. If they do, I would say there's often maybe like 3 or so rounds of interviews is the norm, and maybe each one is separated by a week or two, and it can take some time to get feedback in between. So, and after the last one, if the candidate is keen to proceed and the firm likes the candidate, then maybe it will take them about a week or two to put together an offer letter. And the candidate usually has about 2 weeks to sign it. So, altogether, I would say 2 months is pretty common timeline to budget for the process, but it
Right.
can take longer. And sometimes you don't hear back. And I do a lot of following up as a recruiter. That's a big part of my job, staying on top of processes and following up.
Yeah, that's so important, staying on top of things, because on both sides, right, the candidates waiting to hear, and maybe they're interviewing at other places as well. And then you're in the middle there, keeping everybody nice and settled and up to date. And I think that's probably one of the hardest jobs when you are a recruiter. And I loved how you mentioned a fit for an open role. And what does fit for mean? Does it mean that that person checks most of the boxes? I don't really want to say boxes, but most of the job description items. Would that make per a person a fit for a position?
Exactly. Fit is basically for law firms, it's much more unusual than on the in-house side to have an actual job description. So fit would be, first of all, practice area and seniority. So if the firm says, I'm looking for, let's say, a 2 PQE associate with M&A experience who is bilingual, then fit is going to be their seniority, their practice area, and their language skills primarily. But then it's also things like knowing the firm and kind of the level of credentials they typically look for, knowing whether some firms have different feelings about when it comes to foreign associates, like US versus UK versus Australia, New Zealand. Obviously, Bengoshi, the considerations are different. So those are mainly the considerations, and it could be sometimes even something like a personality fit.
Right. Okay. So that's the interesting difference then, isn't it? That there's no big long job description and details of what you're doing. It's already taken for granted in a way that people are going to know because of practice area, seniority, bilingual. And so those are the things that are the difference perhaps between someone who might be looking for in-house role here and law firm. You've just hit the nail on the head that I hadn't quite figured out before about the differences there.
Yeah, it's actually
Ah.
a really different process, and I would
Right.
say especially on the law firm side, because often there is no job description. That's kind of an important role that the recruiter serves in
Right.
bridging the gap, because especially if someone, even people in Tokyo, even if you're just working at one firm, you're working very hard every day, you might not necessarily know what the culture is like at other firms in town, how many people they have, what's the breakdown between foreign lawyers and Bengoshi, what practice areas do they have. So it's really up to the recruiter to kind of fill in the gaps. And a lot of what I do when I speak to candidates is kind of telling them about the offices here. What are the practices like? What are, partners' personalities like? What is kind of the office culture like? Because often there's no like piece of paper that I can pass along to
No,
someone that
that's
gives them all
right.
that information they're looking for. So that is a really big difference. And another big difference, I would say, between law firm and in-house recruiting, which I just wasn't really aware of it. It wasn't something I thought about before becoming a recruiter, is that on the in-house side, recruiting is a bit more strict, I guess, in that the legal team will have budget and headcount, let's say, to hire one person. So the client will come to the recruiting agency and say, I'm looking for someone for this particular search on this timeline. And then a recruiter who would work on that search is going out to the market, identifying suitable candidates, contacting them, trying to find someone who fits. But on the law firm side, we do that if there's an open role, but a lot of times there isn't an open role necessarily, but law firms do have the ability to kind of make opportunistic hires. And that can be especially common in Tokyo compared to other markets because hiring is very, very difficult here. It's a small market. It's hard to find people who want to work here. It's hard to find people with the requisite language skills. A lot of the offices are small, so personality can become even more important because it's important to make sure that everybody in a small office gets along, of course. So that's another big difference, is that we're not necessarily going to the market looking for one specific type of candidate, but it's more about getting to know people in general in the market, even if they're not looking to move now, or even I'd spend a lot of time talking to people overseas who are interested in moving to Tokyo eventually. But either not yet, or maybe they are looking to move, but they really don't know much about the market. So it's a pretty different process.
Yeah, it's wholly different actually. And I think you're calling out really well the fact that you should really get in touch with the correct or appropriate legal recruiter, a specialist like yourself too, right? Someone who's specializing in legal recruitment, but knowing which side they're working on. So obviously what you're telling me for law firm hires is completely different to in-house legal role hires. And so I think that's really an important point you've called out there to get to the right person to help you with all of those things you just talked about. I think holistically, as I'm hearing it, the different kinds of aspects that really matter, and the things that you can tell them, office's practice, office culture, the personality, and things like that. That's really interesting that you've called those things out.
Yeah, it's a totally different process. And I think sometimes it's kind of hard to explain to people because initially, when I became a recruiter, people who were already in my network contacted me, which I was really, really grateful for. But they would kind of say, either I'm in-house or looking to go in-house. Can you kind of represent me to find a job? And of course, I really, really wanted to, and I really wanted to help them. But when it comes to in-house roles, I have colleagues who specialize in in-house recruitment, but it doesn't work that way. You can't just knock on the door of a bunch of companies and say, I have this great candidate. Do you want to hire them? Basically, there has to be a fit between the candidate and the role at the time. And companies generally, they don't have budget to hire somebody who deviates from what they're looking for, or if they don't have an open role, they just don't have the capacity to bring on an opportunistic hire. So in-house recruiting can really be all about timing, as opposed to law firms, you might have a little bit more flexibility. So that's quite
Right.
different.
And I loved how you called that word out, opportunistic hires. That's really outstanding, and it shows exactly how the law firms are. They're ready for something and able to hire if the right person comes along at perhaps roundabout the right timing. They'll look into that. And I think that's great. And what are you actually seeing then from hiring managers in law firms? What are they looking for? You talked about language capability there and personality. Can you explain a bit more about that?
It really depends on the role, the firm, the candidate, and also whether it's Bengoshi or international lawyers. So, I mean, one trend that I have seen since becoming a recruiter, which hasn't been that long, is just so much interest in hiring Bengoshi associates. I think this is a trend that will continue in the future. Right now, it's partially driven by the economy because of this potentially coming recession, the war, the annyasu, the weakening of the yen, which makes it much harder for Japanese companies to buy overseas targets. So traditionally, like the drivers of hiring foreign lawyers in Japan were the Japanese companies here who were doing a lot of outbound M&A. But because of all of those factors, now there is less outbound work and more inbound work. Japan is now a more attractive investment target for overseas investors, in part because of the weakening of the yen. So more inbound work can, I mean, often those deals could still be done by a mix of Bangoshi and international lawyers. But basically, there is less demand for international lawyers, more demand for Bangoshi. So that's a trend we're seeing right now. But at the same time, I think a lot of firms do want to bolster their Bangoshi ranks for the longer term, too. So I don't think the trend is only tied to the current economic situation. So yeah, those are two factors. So it depends on, what kinds of deals are going on in the market and who you need to staff them. And then language is important. It depends on the practice area. So the capital markets practices in Tokyo, often a very high level of Japanese fluency is required for foreign lawyers, followed by M&A. A lot of the M&A positions require or ideally want someone who's fluent in Japanese because traditionally, a lot of the deals were done by Japanese companies investing overseas. So that means a lot of client communication, like meetings and emails, is in Japanese. So it's much easier to have a member of the team who can follow along without needing translations of those bits of communication. And then project finance is another major area for foreign lawyers here. And project finance tends to be the least language heavy. There are some firms that do want their lawyers, even on project finance teams, to be fluent in Japanese. But for a lot of firms, that is not a requirement. So basically, language skills and the kind of the interplay between the practice area and language skills is a big factor, I would say. And then for Bangoshi, too, it's going to be the level of English required in the role. So some roles, if you're working on mostly cross-border matters, working very closely with foreign lawyers, you might need a very high level of English. Sometimes for the more junior Bangoshi roles, firms actually say it's okay if someone's English is not that strong, especially working in an international firm environment. It will get stronger in working with the foreign lawyers. So there can be, various degrees of language proficiency required for both sets of associates.
Wow, that's an excellent explanation of the language for both Bengoshi and for overseas or international lawyers. Within those practice areas, are there any industries or sectors that you are seeing that are pretty hot right now? We're hearing a lot about sustainability, ESG, tech and digital, those kinds of things. Anything you're seeing from your side there?
I mean, there are a lot of compliance issues that require attention, obviously, now. Sometimes that's more prominent on the in-house side, but I think sanctions lawyers, it's not a big practice in Tokyo, but sanctions lawyers have been quite busy this year, especially because of the war. And then also we have things like data privacy compliance. So compliance overall is kind of a hotter area than it used to be. I would still say probably the plurality of roles in Tokyo are for deals lawyers and more specifically M&A. That's what I see the most of. But probably in the future, we may see more demand for compliance and also for things like crisis management, investigations. Those practices in international firms are still relatively small now. But there could be scope for them to grow in the future. And those practices at Japanese firms like Kikikondi, the crisis management and investigations, are already, they're very, very large practices with large teams, but not the same in international law firms.
Very interesting. It's just interesting too, the impact of these geopolitical issues, the NYSE, right? The yen weakening and how that really has immediately impacted the market here. But as you've just said, it's not always consistent that it's going to be that forever. And so people might think, oh, I shouldn't be bothered to coming into Japan. They only want domestic qualified lawyers. But actually, looking to the future, if you're thinking further down the track, should also be thinking about how things may change if the yen rises again or when the war finishes, for example, right? So always being future thinking. Very
Right,
interesting.
exactly. And I mean, for a long time, as you would know very, very well, during the pandemic, non-Japanese residents or citizens could not get visas to work in Japan. So for, I guess, about 2 years, I think until March this year, foreign lawyers who were not already resident here couldn't enter the country. So there was a bit of kind of a backlog that any of the open roles that couldn't be filled by a lateral associate who was already in the market here. Normally, we do have people coming over from overseas, especially US, UK, New Zealand, Australia. Not a huge amount, but obviously, there are people like us who have come over the years and made careers here. But we just didn't have that for a full 2 years. So at first, when the government began reissuing business visas, there was a bit of a backlog. Some people had been hired and were working remotely. That hiring was coming back once firms had greater certainty that people would actually be allowed into the country. Because for a long time, there was just so much uncertainty around the timing. And of course, if you're in the US working for a Tokyo office, the time zones are completely flipped. So that's not really a viable long-term arrangement. So first, there were more people coming into the country, but then, as we've seen geopolitical events unfold this year, even though we still have people entering, there is definitely more demand on the Bangoshi side than the international lawyer side. So there are roles for international lawyers, but it's not like, the floodgates flung open with people entering the country. It's a bit more limited, perhaps.
Interesting. And it's good to have that realistic understanding that just because there's been a backlog that's cleared, we're now demanding to have, or that the demand is there for international lawyers to, as you say, flood in. In fact, it's really been affected by these other circumstantial, right, issues that you've talked about, the politics, the yen being cheaper, and those things that are really impacting. But for people looking forward, looking to the future, what do you think these law firm lawyers really need to be getting ready for to be successful in the market? I often talk about ready to be ready to be ready, which is something I learned from my education, not my education, something I learned from my coaching, executive coaching person, was to be ready to be ready to be ready is, what do the people need in their toolbox to be thinking about for just a little bit further down the track there, Mindy?
Again, it kind of depends on your positioning. If you're somebody who wants to come to Japan, who is not currently here, then the best things you can do to kind of prepare for a move to Japan would be one, if you speak some Japanese, to work on your Japanese, because language skills, I think, really are valuable for international lawyers and they will make you much more marketable. It can, again, depend on the practice area, but you will never regret studying Japanese if you want to have a career here and, putting time into having a greater level of fluency. So I would say working on language skills is one thing. And then also, firms, when they're interviewing people who are not currently resident in Japan, who haven't either grown up here or spent a lot of time here, or, for example, studied abroad here when they were in university, what firms are looking for is kind of a long-term commitment to Japan, because that is a process to bring someone over here, to get a visa, to help somebody get settled, make sure that they adjust to the culture. It's not just entering a new law firm, but you're changing countries, you're part of a whole new culture. So firms are concerned about kind of investing in the right person and making sure that once they've kind of put all of the resources into onboarding a new associate coming from overseas, that the person actually wants to stay for more than just 2 years or so to have a Japan experience. They often are looking for people who really want to develop a career here long term. So kind of having a compelling story of why you want to be here is also an important part, I think, of preparing to move to Japan, and it's something that would be very different from just finding a job in your home market.
Oh, great advice. I mean, language skills, now's the time to build on those. Well, yeah, that's exactly. The time is your friend, actually. So why not use that and invest in it? And I loved your advice there too about people who are not resident or haven't been here before. Why are you suddenly wanting to come to Japan? It's cool. It's cool in Tokyo. Yes, we know it is, but what else? What's your compelling story? I think those are fabulous tips there too, Mindy. Thank you so much. I'm going to jump back because I want to know, and I'm sure people are listening here going, what on earth drew Mindy away from being a law firm lawyer into this exciting world of legal recruiting? So I wanted you to tell me a little bit about that. And How also lawyers can make really great recruiters? Those are my two questions. What brought you into this area now, and what makes a lawyer into a really great recruiter?
So I also am surprised that I became a recruiter, to be very honest. People often ask me when I talk to them, like, why you were a lawyer for so long? Why are you doing this now? And it's not something I ever set out to do or ever expected to do. And I think if someone told me 5 years ago or even 3 years ago that I would be a recruiter now, I would be really shocked. Say what happened? Why did my career go off the rails? But it's actually been really great. But it was not expected. It wasn't something I was planning. Basically, I was recruited to be a recruiter at my company, Major Lindsay in Africa, by our mutual acquaintance, Lori LeBrun, who opened our
Yes.
Tokyo office 15 years ago. She's also, a former New York lawyer. So we had a lot in common, and I've worked with her as my recruiter over the years. I knew her very well. And yeah, basically, she recruited me, and I wasn't actually looking for another job at the time. We had just caught up during COVID over coffee. It was nice to kind of have human contact with somebody who wasn't my husband and get out of the house and just catch up about the market. And she mentioned that she was really busy and the potential to join her. And I was honestly really shocked at first because I'd never considered doing anything that wasn't strictly legal. I kind of thought I'm a lawyer, so I can work at a firm or I can go in-house. I know in the US where I'm from, people might have a broader range of options. People leave to like join startups or start a business or do other things. But in Japan, it can feel like your options are more limited. So I'd never really considered doing anything other than practicing law. So at first, I was just kind of shocked and needed a while to get my head around it. And kind of my initial reaction was kind of like, no, I'm a lawyer, so I must continue to be a lawyer. Of course, that's why I went to school for so many years. Why would I not continue to be a lawyer? Like, I think it's something I'm good at. It is something I enjoy most of the time. So why would I just stop practicing? So I was just really caught off guard, and I thought about it, and it was actually coming home and talking to my husband that gave me the push, because he kind of said, I think that's something you would really like. I think it would suit your personality really well. You know a lot about the market. You already have a lot of contacts because you've been here for a long time. You've worked in a few different places. I've been in private practice and in-house. I've worked in New York. I've worked in Tokyo. I've worked in US firm, a Japanese firm. So I do have a pretty broad sense of the market. And I like talking to people and I like helping people. And that's something that drew me to law in the first place. But it is also something that sometimes when I would just kind of work in front of my computer for like 12 to 14 hours a day and not actually talk to anybody other than through email, it can feel like, like what is my role here? Like, what is my relationship with my clients? Like, everything is just through a computer screen. Sometimes I would feel like I wasn't really having that much human contact. I mean, I would talk to my colleagues, but I was feeling a little bit disconnected and I think missing that human contact element. So when I thought about it, it took me a really long time to come around to it. But when I thought about it, I thought, even though it's not something I ever expected, that maybe that could be really good for me and a really good fit for my personality, because maybe some of my kind of like need for human contact and the fact that I really like giving advice, that's something I like about being a lawyer, but maybe some of those needs aren't being totally fulfilled by my private practice job. And actually, maybe I do have a lot to offer because I know about the market. And also I speak Japanese, so I can speak with Bengoshi in Japanese and kind of educate them about the market, because it's kind of a separate topic, but I think a lot of Bengoshi can have a very narrow view also of what it means to be a lawyer and what career options are open to them. So basically thinking about all of those things and together with like dislocation during the pandemic, making all of us kind of question our daily lives and routines, I kind of thought, actually, Like, why not? I've already done things in my career that I didn't expect. When I started out, I expected to become a partner in a US law firm, and that was what I wanted for a long time. And then I kind of got off that track. Then I went in-house, I worked at a boutique firm. Like, my career had already kind of taken some unexpected turns, but that worked out really well and that I enjoyed. So I guess I kind of thought at that point, why not take on another challenge? Why not try something new? It's not going to be the first time I've tried something new, and I've always kind of enjoyed the challenge and gained a lot from whatever I was doing. So I just decided to go for it, basically.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear what you just said. It's the first time I've actually heard you talk about this and how you managed to move yourself around from, I'm a lawyer. I've got to do law. Why am I doing this? I've practiced and been studying for so long to this, oh, I've had unexpected turns. Why not? Attitude. And I just love this, and I think it's going to be the central part of our conversation today, is that this is what we can do with our lives as lawyers. We don't have to be boxed into lawyer does X, Y, Z. Actually, lawyers do lots of different things, and I really love how you are role modeling this for others to show that they can, in fact, not go off the rails, Mindy, but take these unexpected turns and do things differently. And in the same way, had someone said to me 5, 10 years ago, oh, you will be running your own law firm. Oh, you will be a podcaster. Can you imagine how much I would have laughed at that too? We don't know what's destined for us. And I think the things that we don't go and find it too. I think the things that we need, meeting your needs, you talked about that. I think those needs come to us. They come and visit us. They tap on the door and they tell us, you need to do this. This is for you. And so I think that's what's happened with recruiting for you, for legal recruiting, in that it matches your personality, right? You've found the place where you can help and talk with people and advise them. It may not be legal advice on the latest M&A deal, but you're helping people in their most amazing, important things in their lives, their career. I just love what you've just told us. And I hope that people, at least one person listening to you today, can think, ah, I'm going to take that step. That offer that came to me the other day, or that little thing that I heard, I'm going to take the next step towards that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, sometimes I still wonder, like, what would have happened if I'd stayed a lawyer? But yeah, basically, once you take the plunge, it's much less scary than you
And why not?
would
I
have
mean, what's the worst
thought.
thing? You can always go back to being a lawyer if you
Yeah,
wish.
exactly. That
I
was
mean,
really
you are still a
reassuring,
lawyer,
too.
Mindy. Let's just say you
Yeah,
are still
that's
a lawyer.
right.
You could return to private practice if you wanted, or take an in-house role, or set up your own firm, or do anything you want. You've
Yeah,
now shown
exactly.
the world really is your oyster, and you can do anything you wish. And I love that, your husband gave you some insights there too on yourself. I mean, he's the person you married, and so he's got insights to your personality. I wonder what it was that you think that Laurie saw in you when she thought, I've got an opening. Why don't you? Do you know, has she told you what she saw in you?
I think it was just a combination of the fact that I do know the market well, which I think I didn't realize at first. I kind of my tendency is to say, like, no, I don't have any useful information to share. But when I thought about it, I did
You
think
do.
that was true, that I do have a lot of firsthand experience and secondhand experience, and I do know a lot, and I'm interested in the market. I've always been interested, even when I was just in practice. So I think that knowledge and having a lot of contacts from having been here for a long time and worked with a lot of people, and also my Japanese skills, because that's something that would be somewhat new for a recruiter in our office. So that would kind of better enable me to connect with Bengoshi in the market, which is something my office hadn't focused that much on before I joined.
Right. So you're seeing a different way of using your language there too, right? Being a creating new value and asset to the office that they didn't have that before.
Yeah, and the timing works out well because now I'm just seeing so much need for Bengoshi from law firms. Bengoshi recruiting, honestly, is very difficult, but it's good that I think I'm very well equipped to at least try to recruit that part of the market.
And what's one thing that surprised you about this role that you've got when you joined, that you thought perhaps, and now, That's different to what I thought. Anything that surprised you?
A lot of things have surprised me. So one was kind of the difference I spoke about earlier about in-house versus law firm recruiting. The fact that, you know, generally if someone is doing law firm recruiting, most recruiters should basically know every firm in the market and have contacts there. So if you want to find a law firm role, you can just work with one recruiter. And from a recruiting perspective, it's better if you work with one recruiter to apply to as many firms as you want to, or, you know, that are feasible for you to apply to. But for in-house, because different recruiters have different roles at different companies, and a lot of them are exclusive retained roles, that may not be the case. So one recruiter is not covering the entire in-house market. I didn't understand that distinction before. And again, like the distinction between kind of representing a candidate to apply to law firms, it's more of a candidate-driven process, whereas in-house can sometimes be more of a client-driven process. I just literally had never given any thought to those distinctions before about how it worked, but that kind of explained to me, oh, that makes more sense. Like, that's why a few years ago when I wanted to go in-house, I had spoken to a couple of different recruiters, and they all kind of had, you know, maybe two jobs in-house at companies that were open to foreign lawyers. So I had to talk to a bunch of people to get a better sense of the market. And why that was unique to in-house roles as opposed to law firm recruiting. So that was one thing. I guess another thing that surprised me is a lot of things, actually. One is, so I do spend a lot of time speaking to younger Bengoshi associates, and I've been very pleasantly surprised about how many people are really concerned about work-life balance, and they do feel overworked. Maybe at their, you know, large Japanese, especially a big four Japanese law firm. And even though that's what they signed up to do and they're getting really great training and mentoring there, that's not what they want to do long term. So I think the market is kind of slowly changing in the way that it's changed in the US too. And that my image of Bengoshi, because I used to sometimes work, I never had Bengoshi in my offices, but sometimes we would work with Bengoshi as local counsel or across from Bengoshi, and I would just get these emails at like 3 or 4 in the morning every single day and think, like, people are working so insanely hard. I thought I was a hard worker, like working till midnight, but I don't work until 3 in the morning on a consistent basis. But that is what a lot of Bengoshi associates do, sometimes not even just associates. So I always just had this image of, like, Japanese Bengoshi are kind of insane. They work these crazy hours. Why is the culture like this? Like, why do people want to do this? But talking to people, I find, yes, that's still the dominant culture, but a lot of people don't actually want to do that long term. And even though I have kind of an image of, let's say, Japanese law firms being more male dominated, and it's true, because even at the associate level, honestly, the number of women who even pass the Japanese bar exam, it's not 50-50 at all. It's far, far lower. So because of that, the number of female associates you have in an entering class is just a much smaller percentage than it would be in the US, for example, where it's basically 50-50 or even sometimes 55% women. So of course that works its way up the ranks too. But honestly, speaking to a lot of younger male associates, they say, like, yeah, I'm getting good experience now, but this is not for me long term. I want to have a family, or I have a family now. I definitely need better hours, better work-life balance. I want to go in-house. Or sometimes people even say, like, my wife is also a Bengoshi and I want to support her career. It's not feasible for both of us to do this with kids. So I want to let her focus on her career, and I want to have a job that allows me more flexibility and more free time to care for our family. So that's actually been really wonderful and refreshing to hear that was a bit contrary to the image I have, but it does make me feel like the younger generation is going to change things.
Yeah, a bit different to the image I have as well. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad that people are seeing work-life balance as a thing, a real thing. And we often hear too lately, Mindy, this I don't know, great resignation and quiet quitting. They seem to be the concepts of the day that people throw around. And I don't know that Japan is as affected by that, but the great resignation on a softer way, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the way that Japan exhibits that, with a more direct connection through to work-life balance. What do you think about those things? Is there quiet quitting? Is there this great resignation happening in Japan, even in very subtle ways?
I agree with you that we haven't really seen a great resignation here the way we've seen in other countries. And actually, I think this, I don't know the exact statistics, but I think because maybe people, especially lawyers in Japan, are more risk averse in general, if anything, there was less job movement during the pandemic because people kind of just buckled down and wanted to stay where they were. Whereas in the US in 2021, the market was completely insane. There was so much lateral firm movement. But at the same time, I think it's definitely caused people to really re-examine and question their priorities. And a lot of people, both men and women, have decided that working from home, flexible working hours, better work-life balance are all extremely important to them now that they've been able to experience that. And they're basically just not willing to go back to the way things were before. So even though we don't have this huge wave of people quitting here, especially my colleagues on the in-house side say that sometimes a major motivation for people to change jobs is that now that things are kind of resettling, we're not done with the pandemic, but people are trying to return to some sort of normalcy in their lives. And so, of course, some companies are asking people to come back to the office to varying degrees. And basically being asked to come back 5 days a week is a trigger for a lot of people on the Japanese legal professional side, not just the international lawyers, but to look for more jobs and say, I'm no longer willing to come in 5 days a week. So what are my options for somewhere that will offer me greater flexibility? So I think that's been a huge shift that took a long time to penetrate Japan, because I do think overall, other than some of the international companies, especially on the tech side, Japanese companies took a much longer time here to kind of allow people to work from home. They just weren't set up for that. And that was also true at Japanese law firms. I'm sure you know, Bengoshi often use a lot of books in their practice, which is quite different from international lawyers. I don't really use any books. I just use online resources. But it was really hard for people to work from home because all of your books were in the office. But then once you had this great shift of bringing all of your resources home, then people got really used to that, and it became harder to go to the office because you didn't have all of your books there. So I think on both the law firm and the Japanese company side, although it took a really long time compared to other countries to transition to working from home, they eventually did it, and they implemented the systems and technologies necessary to achieve that. And now basically most people, they like that lifestyle. And even if they are willing or happy to come back to the office a couple times a week, no, most people are not interested in coming back full time. So I do think that's been a huge shift in Japanese society.
It's actually massive, isn't it? Because it was always about being seen in the office, being in the office. It was such a necessity. So what you're saying, it's not even a surface level change. It's actually penetrated right through, that people now are using it as a trigger, as you use that word, trigger, to think differently and re-examine their priorities. And that comes through to their work, even for Japanese Bengoshi. I think that's going to show quite a different next 2 or 3 years, as we have different people working differently. And wow, I don't know, maybe it's a silver lining to the pandemic, but I think that's a really great move that we've seen these trends starting to happen. Another trend you talked about too, Mindy, you talked about trends recently too in an article that you wrote. About the Bengoshi as well. There used to be a trend to do a lot of LLM study overseas, and you wrote about a different kind of trend happening there. I'd love to call that out because I think that article's great, and we'll put the article in English and in Japanese into the show notes. But can you just summarize that a little bit for us? So that's another trend that you've called out.
Sure, thank you. Thanks for mentioning it. And that was yet another thing that kind of surprised me becoming a recruiter, because at first I would talk to law firms, and like I had mentioned, a lot of law firms were looking for Bengoshi associates, especially I would say at like the 2 to 7 year PQE mark. And so at first I was like, this is so great. I have so many Bengoshi associate searches to work on. All I have to do is find people, match them to jobs. Like, this is great. But then when I started reaching out to Bengoshi, I was kind of surprised to find actually that exact target year, like basically from second to third year for Bengoshi, especially if they're working in large Japanese firms, they're very focused on applying to LLM programs. Let's say when they're like fourth to fifth years. And so if I talk to people, they say, oh, I might be interested in moving after my LLM, like in 5 years from now. But like next year, I'm going to take the TOEFL, I'm going to apply to LLM programs, then I'm going to go. And the typical track basically is, you know, it takes a long time to prepare to apply. Then you go to the LLM program for at least a year, sometimes even longer if you do a summer program beforehand, which some schools offer. And then traditionally, you do this 1 year of OPT, like Kenshu training at a foreign law firm. So often, if you've gotten your LLM in the US, then you spend a year at a law firm, a US law firm that your Japanese firm has a relationship with, and they'll arrange this kind of secondment for you. And then after that, you will probably return to Japan. But it depends on the law firm. But some law firms, in return for paying for your LLM fees and setting everything up, they expect their lawyers to return to the firm for at least 2 years to kind of repay that debt in a way. And some firms, it's even 3 years. In-house, it can be 5 years. So basically, if a Bengoshi is set on getting their LLM, they're kind of locked into this whole process for it ends up being like 5 plus years. Where if they're planning to get their LLM through their current firm, then they're not able to change jobs until the end of that process. And they just go into it thinking, like, even if I don't want to stay at my firm long term, even if I don't even like my job, basically the only reason, my only motivation for working until 3 or 4 in the morning is that, you know, in a year's time or 2 years' time, I'm going to get to go to the US, get an LLM. That's the thing that I've been working toward for years. I'm so excited about that, and my firm will sponsor me. So, of course, I'm not going to give that up. But that means you're kind of off the lateral career track for a whole 5 year chunk of your career. And that also happens to be the period when firms are most interested in hiring you as a lateral associate. So I kind of learned early that there's so much demand for Bengoshi in this category, but they're not actually, it's very, very hard to find somebody who's actually interested and willing to change jobs during that period because of the LLM. So that got me thinking. I mean, if you look around, you know, at any Bengoshi partner in a Big Four firm, everybody has an LLM. If you look at their CV, everybody spent a year working at a US firm. Some people now get their LLMs in the UK, work at a UK firm, but basically everybody has done this. But I also realized initially when I joined, I met some law firm partners and was talking to them about their needs and what they were looking for. And something I was hearing, so I would ask, do you sponsor, you know, if you hire a Bengoshi who hasn't gotten their LLM yet, will you sponsor their LLM? Because that is something a lot of Bengoshi are concerned about. Maybe they would consider moving firms if it would mean that they weren't derailed from the LLM track. And the partners would say it's something we will do, but honestly, we don't really see the value of it. We would rather, since we're an international firm, we would rather send the person to one of our overseas offices for a year because then, you know, they're not stopping work. They're getting really good work experience. They're getting to meet more colleagues within the firm. They're still getting that overseas experience, getting to use probably even more English than they would be using in an LLM program. When they're just sitting in class and not necessarily participating. And then, of course, the firm doesn't have to pay. So that's appealing to the firm. But at the same time, that means the lawyer also is not beholden to come back to the firm for a certain period of time. So that was something I was hearing and kind of putting them together. I was thinking, so what is this kind of LLM mystique? It's just kind of gospel that if you're a Bengoshi, that you're going to get your LLM after, let's say, 4 to 6 years of practice in a firm. But is that actually something that everybody should be doing? Is it helpful? And can it actually hinder your career progress in some ways if what you want is either to switch firms or go in-house or do something else, but instead, because you're on this track, you're locking yourself into staying at your current firm until, let's say, you're like a 7th year to a 10th year. And by that time, it may be very hard to lateral to another firm. So that was kind of the impetus for me writing this article. And I know the practice of going to LLM programs is just so strongly ingrained, and it is very hard to change people's thinking about it. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't go. It can be a really great opportunity for a lot of people. But basically, as with many things that I've kind of discovered as a recruiter and what I try to get across to people and talking to them, and as you can see in my own career, is kind of, it's important to question the conventional wisdom and see if this is really something that works for you and will serve your interests. Is there another way to achieve your objective? If your objective is to go abroad, let's say, by switching firms and, you know, spending a year or two in one of their European or US offices, is this actually fulfilling the objectives that are most important to you? Or are you kind of just on this conveyor belt and you assume that's what you should do and that it's a benefit, so of course you should take advantage of it? So that was what I wanted to explore.
Yeah, and I think it's so amazing how you connected all those dots and wrote this forward-thinking article. And I really hope there are people reading it. Honestly, we will share as much as we can, because I think that's what we're all about here on the podcast and on with the people that I speak with, is questioning that conventional wisdom. Do we always have to go to an in-house role after law firm roles? Do we have to do this certain process? Actually, there are different ways to achieve your objectives. And I think you're calling this out with the specific nature of the LLM program. Again, as you said, it's not, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a safe option, but it also does have those consequences. And I loved how you talked about, you know, that there are different ways to achieve it. You can go and work in another office of the firm and still achieve those sort of working in English, building up my English skills. And again, that not being beholden. I think it just opens up another, I can see a light bulb appearing above people's heads, hopefully, that there are just different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely true. And I've been kind of heartened to receive some messages from Bengoshi after I published the article saying, like, thank you for writing this. I don't really see much content like this. Like, it's just really useful for me to consider what I should actually do. And I've also talked to some Bengoshi who, especially maybe people who are Kikokushicho, so they've grown up partially abroad and they already have very strong English, and they say, oh, it's helpful, because I was already thinking, actually, maybe I don't want to get an LLM because, you know, I already speak English, so I don't need to go for that reason. Maybe it's okay to feel that way, and it's not something I have to do just because most people around me do it and all of my partners have done it.
It's really great to hear that. Thank you for writing it, and we will share and hope that others can eventually change their pattern, and maybe in a couple of years we can check back and see who in your book of business have done this newish way that you've sort of highlighted to everybody in brilliant lights, and different ways of doing law. So speaking about that, Mindy, as we're sort of winding down, this future of legal recruitment market in 2023 that we're coming up to and beyond, what are you seeing in the legal recruitment market for 2023?
I mean, part of it will depend on the economy and whether we see increased demand for international lawyers, especially on the M&A side again. But I think maybe more of the same, even though who knows what 2023 holds. But I think the major trends being international firms being very interested in hiring more junior and mid-level Bengoshi associates, which it's very hard to hire people because of this whole LLM thing that we were just talking about. Mm. But I don't see that going away at all. And then also like the focus on flexible working, not going to the office 5 days a week, probably more Bengoshi who I've talked to being interested in going in-house than maybe they were in years past, because they've realized, I think a lot of people used to associate Bengoshi with law firm practice because traditionally the in-house legal departments were not staffed by qualified lawyers. And so Bengoshi thought that was something, that might be below them, or why would I do that? Or why would I go and just do like Ringi, the internal approval processes? That's not being a real lawyer. But obviously the view in Japan has changed and it's continuing to change. And I still talk to some people who just think, no, why would I ever go in-house? But then I talk to other people who, when they hear about the types of opportunities and the salaries too, which are getting quite attractive, they say like, oh, I had no idea. I thought that you would just process internal approvals. I didn't know that you could have, so much autonomy, such great opportunities, honestly, really competitive compensation. So I think we'll probably see, the people being interested in work-life balance, exploring other paths other than just becoming a partner at their current large firm. Hopefully over time, more people interested in working at international law firms because there is so much demand for Bengoshi there. But I think that's still considered a bit of a non-traditional path for Bengoshi. So that's what I'm hoping to see. It may take until, 2025 or later. I think it will take more than a year, but I think things are heading more in those
That's
directions. It
great.
just takes time.
Yeah, it's good to do some crystal ball gazing. And I often think what we put out there into the universe will actually visualize into something. And I think it's really important from what you've been saying all the way through is that there are so many different ways to be the so-called inverted commas real lawyer. There are just different ways. So, not being someone who's a litigator or being a deal maker in M&A. It doesn't mean if you're not doing those kinds of jobs that you are doing something differently, that you're not no less a lawyer. And I think that's one thing we'd really like to push home to everybody is, be helpful to yourself, be kind to yourself, and if you want to do something different in the law, then, just do it. Why not?
Yeah, and I think one thing I try to do as a recruiter is just give people as much information as possible about the different opportunities and career paths so everybody can choose what's best for them. And I guess other trends that I've seen is one is more boutique law firms, generally on the Japanese side. But obviously, I practiced at a boutique, Southgate, and a lot of Bengoshi who I contact, they see that I worked at Southgate. And actually, they often say, oh, like, I think Southgate is really cool. I'm interested in working somewhere like that in the future. So I see more interest in kind of, alternatives, like working in a boutique law firm, which can be a really interesting avenue for people. And then another trend I see is some of the big Japanese law firms are kind of increasingly hiring foreign lawyers and creating real career tracks for them. It's still like a small part of the industry, but I think that's also a growing area where people can consider on the international lawyer side, if people have been working at a big law firm for a number of years, they don't want to be partner. They don't want to keep working those hours. And they say, what can I do? And unfortunately, there are the in-house opportunities for international lawyers, I would say, are still fairly limited, especially if you're not fluent in Japanese. But I see that as another avenue, just another alternative for foreign lawyers. And I think traditionally, maybe it wasn't that appealing, which I can definitely understand because a lot of the Japanese firms maybe didn't know how to use their foreign lawyers effectively, and couldn't provide a career path. And people, don't want to go from being a high-powered lawyer to just checking English documents. That's totally understandable. But I do see some of the Japanese firms being more interested in creating like a place where foreign lawyers can actually develop their careers. And it's not perfect and it's still developing, but that's a trend that I think will continue in the future too.
Excellent. And any just general advice, Mindy, for law firm lawyers or lawyers in general, perhaps for women lawyers, as they're moving through in their careers, it's just as we wind up, my final question for you.
I guess just be open-minded and really consider what your priorities are and how to achieve them. I think that's kind of yet another thing I've learned as a recruiter is that people think, well, you know, I'm on this path, so this is what I have to do. So for Bengoshi, that might mean I'm at, you know, a big four firm. It's extremely prestigious. So I should stay here. I should get the LLM. I should, you know, think about becoming partner. For international lawyers, it can mean if you're at one of the Wall Street law firms, it's not true of every firm, but if you're there, you might get paid a lot. You're on US salary. You might also get an expat package, and you kind of say, well, I may not really like my job and I don't want to keep doing it, but I make a lot of money, and why would I, you know, step off this track and get paid much less to do something else? So even though this isn't making me happy and it's not what I want to do, like, I'm paid well, so I might as well just stay here. So I think kind of challenging ourselves to maybe think more creatively or try to think about what are our priorities really? Like, should we be just driven by money or just driven by, you know, this is a traditional path, so that's what I should do. It's okay to do other things. You can always step back on in the future. You can go back to your big four firm or your international firm if you haven't been away for that long. But yeah, it can be good to give things a try. And, you know, sometimes how much money do we really need to be happy or things like that? Maybe it would be fun to try something new, honestly. Like, I didn't expect to try new things in my career in a lot of ways. My career has been really unexpected to me, but I've learned so much and I've really enjoyed all the steps in the process. And I think I've learned so much more than maybe I would have if I had just stayed at one firm for 10 years, even though that can also be very, very valuable. And of course, that's great for a lot of people. But just question, you know, why are you staying in the same place? That's a decision in itself, right? The decision not to think about what else you might do in the future. It's okay to do other things. Yeah. You should just think about what makes you happy and try not to worry about what other people think or what you think you should be doing.
Yeah. In fact, people are more worried about themselves than thinking about what you're thinking about. So just go for it. Is there anything there, Mindy, as the final question that you wanted to emphasize again or that you hadn't talked about that you thought you wanted to speak about today?
Maybe I would say that even if you're not looking for a job, it's never a bad time to talk to a recruiter and form a relationship with somebody. I spend a lot of my time talking to people who are not actively looking for jobs. Basically, I just spend a lot of time getting to know people and telling them about the market. And people may tell me, you know, I don't know when I'll be interested in moving, or maybe I'll be interested, but not for 2 years or 3 years. Or especially on the Bengoshi side, sometimes I talk to people who say, actually, I might be interested, but I'm about to start this 2-year secondment to a government ministry, so I wouldn't be able to move until after that. And that's totally fine. I'm not expecting that every person I talk to is going to actually be a candidate who I will help with a career transition in the future. Part of my job is just, you know, forming connections with people, building relationships, and hopefully we'll keep in touch through the years. And I always say, if you have any questions in the future, like, you can just ask me anytime. I'm here as a resource. So I think, yeah, my final advice is just building a relationship with a recruiter you trust. You don't have to be looking for a job at this moment, but it might be really helpful, because otherwise it can be really hard to get information about the market or to think critically about your career. And then, of course, in the future, if you do ever want to change jobs, it's much easier if you already have that go-to person who you've built a relationship with and they know you and what's important to you, to just kind of hit the ground running rather than start looking from scratch.
So right. You're so right. It's like any other relationship. You just have to be building it as you go along and not just reaching out when you've got a need. I mean, it's a mutual exchange, isn't it? That we help our friends and our people and our relationships, and that they help us. And so a recruiter is the same way. There's many kinds of information and insights that we can share with recruiters as well as the other way. And I think that's really hit the nail on the head there, Mindy, because I think that's one thing that I endeavoured to do with Laurie, who you work with. Mm. I know it's something that Angela Krantz has done all her life, and I think she's a great role model for showing how you keep up with yeah. people all the time and not just simply when you need that help. Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, Mindy, we have come to the end of this special episode with you. Thank you for giving up your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Catherine, for having me back. I hope this is useful to some people. I just think the more information, the better. That's my philosophy.
Absolutely.
And if anyone ever wants to just bounce ideas off of me or just get information about the market, I'm always happy to talk to people. I really love talking to people about Tokyo and helping people kind of yeah. fulfill their career dreams.
Build so. That relationship with Mindy, right? So you've shared so many inspirational insights to the market here, how things are driven differently between, you know, in-house and law firm recruitment, the importance, your final point about building a relationship with a recruiter over your career life, like any other relationship. And also, I loved how you pointed out that trajectory for Japanese Bengoshi and that it can be different, right? There are different mm-hmm. options available. And I think your article really focuses on that, and as well as the other thoughts you've shared today. Thank you so much. And so for people who can get in touch with you, are they able to do that? Which way? Would it be by the LinkedIn or over your email that's on your webpage?
Either one would be great, but I will say as a recruiter, I use LinkedIn constantly. I have it open all the time. I have the app Perfect. On my phone. I really like LinkedIn because you can just casually write a message instead of writing a whole formal email. So
that's so true.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is great, but anyway, either way is totally fine.
Well, we'll drop your LinkedIn address, isn't that we call it, or profile, into the show notes as well. So thank you very, very much. For my listeners here, please do like this episode. I'd be surprised if you don't like it. Also, subscribe to Lawyer on Air and drop us a short review if you can anytime on this episode. And also go listen to Mindy's previous episode because that's full of juice as well on her previous career trajectory that she had and everything else that she talked about. It's been very, very interesting to have you back, Mindy. We really loved having you. Please do go ahead, everybody, and share this episode with someone who might really enjoy listening to it and be inspired to live a wonderful lawyer extraordinaire life. Thanks, everyone. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now.